Be advised, mature content ahead. This podcast is brought to you ad-free thanks to the Legion of Demons at patreon.com/notlp. If you like what you hear, there's much more at patreon.com/notlp. Join the Legion. That's patreon.com/notlp. And now the show.
How do you do?
Just a word of friendly warning. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, we warn you.
Welcome to Night of the Living Podcast. We're doing a series of podcasts called Eat the Rich, movies about class warfare, essentially. I'm Freddie. Amy is here.
Hello.
Andy is here.
Hello.
But his shirt and his pants are missing. Kelly is here.
Top of the morning to you. Top of the morning.
We are recording a little later in the afternoon because Kelly is a time traveler.
Kelly Porter Kelly.
I went to the future.
Yeah.
And I came back with that information and the crew was like, we're not ready for it.
Yep. So we decided to regroup later.
And I don't blame them.
I think I fell asleep at some point.
You did.
I took maybe a very brief nap.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
I can't wait to do the same.
It's a longer movie than I was led to believe.
Oh, that's my fault, probably.
It's all right.
I said it's a short movie.
It didn't bother me. You didn't say it was short. You said it wasn't super long.
Yeah.
We're talking.
Oh, anyways, yeah, the movie.
Semantics.
Coming up, there's a preview.
What's your definition of is?
Our main attraction is Roger Corman's 1964 adaptation of The Mask of the Red Death.
And two other Edgar Allan Poe stories.
Yeah, which all of his Poe movies are mashups. Anyway, this is the first time I've watched this one in its entirety.
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
And then prior to that, Kelly will review Blood Quantum for Straight to Video Russian Roulette. In the meantime, thank you to our patrons, if you're a patron, patreon.com/notlp. We had a really fun meetup Thursday night, like we do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We played some Jackbox. We watched Lance Henriksen cut his fingers off.
Jackbox.
It was fun.
Lance Box.
And
Lance Chop.
Emily came for the first time.
Yeah.
To the meetup.
Oh, yeah. Good for her.
And Neil. Neil and Emily both came for the first time.
Neil and his fun masks.
Yeah, he showed up in a fox mask and a sports coat, and Amy thought we were being Zoom bombed.
I was like, wait a minute. But that'll never happen because we're not cool enough.
But he was really bringing a nice wardrobe and look to the. He looked like a classy college professor, and the rest of us were probably borderline drunk, covered in crumbs.
Showered that day, and that during this time is special.
It's true.
Because I didn't do it today.
Normally, I can see stink lines coming off you.
Yeah, she's like Pigpen.
There's like a waviness to the background behind me.
I was like, check your connection. I was like, oh, wait, that's just you.
Oh, she got stink line connection.
I'm stank.
Pigpen.
Stanky skank. Yeah, welcome to some more shows about rich fucks and the fucking way they fuck everyone.
Kelly just changed the scream name to Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
I thought it was more accurate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm the dream of a lot of nerds.
You are. You're a dream boat.
You are.
You set a standard that nobody can reach. So when we meet real people, we're never going to be let down.
I'm super quirky.
You got to understand that Kelly's mostly airbrush.
Yeah. Mm.
And his neck is way too long to be real.
I'm not as I appear. I'm sorry.
Patreon. Last week we did like two or three episodes of Night of the Comic. I can't remember. Everything's a blur. But we started doing an actual video version of that show. so that we could show the artwork that we're talking about.
Nice.
So if you're on our Patreon or even on our YouTube, you can view it on our YouTube. Our channel is NOTLP Crew, and it's on there. And if you're ever curious what our situations look like.
Wait a minute.
Nice situation.
You can see our situations.
Yeah.
Won't be funny if you're like your listenership dropped after this.
Yeah.
You're like, ugh.
It'd be heartbreaking.
Not a situation I'm into.
Also, I did.
No, you guys are all handsome.
We record that show early now in the morning, and I do not even recognize my own voice.
I'm still in bed when he's recording it, and I just hear him giggling.
Are you like Harvey Firestein when you wake up?
And some giggling.
I just sound like I had a stroke, maybe.
Hello, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You know I hate the taste of fish. This is my friend Scarecrow Woven. Oh my God, these comics this week. His art is gorgeous. This week I read the Mrs. Doubtfire graphic novel adaptation.
Oh, R.I.P. Harvey Fierstein's larynx.
Yeah.
Larynx.
It's been grinded away years and years ago. to just a stump, just a nub. It's like having no muffler on a car.
Well, I applaud it for hanging in for so long.
No, even certainly.
Even though it's like the cat on the poster.
If he didn't have that, what would he even be? He would just be like, "Hi, I'm Harvey Fierstein." Nobody would even do impressions of him.
It'd be too boring.
Yeah.
I want to make a recommendation since we're in the banter section of our show. If you like Thai iced tea, but you don't like a lot of sugar, here's an idea. We made some Bengal spice tea iced in a big jug. You take a little of that and you pour some cream into it, stir it together. It tastes like a fucking Thai iced tea, man.
Well, shit.
Cream is naturally sweet, like heavy cream.
Mm-hmm. And it's, well, the Bengal spice tea is like, it's like a chai tea kind of.
It's rich.
Yes, it is rich. It's delicious. That's what I'm drinking right now.
Check your ass out.
Yeah.
What's everybody's like quarantine concoctions? Like, that's Kelly's. They found a good tea.
Remember I made that horrible cocktail the other night? Usually I'll experiment and come out with something pretty good.
Is that the gin and cherry Coke?
No, it's just
the Midori, isn't it?
Oh, the Midori, that's right.
The Midori wasn't the problem. It was mixing Midori and Blue Curacao together. Don't ever do that. They don't belong together in anything. So unless you love super sweet drinks, which I don't.
Okay, Freddie, was it better or worse than the Mountain Dew cocktail that we had at B-Dubs?
It was equally undrinkable.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
Although that was that B-Dubs cocktail was the worst thing I've ever had.
Up until this point.
As far as cocktails, this one is a close second. This one hurt more because I made it myself.
Oh, I understand.
It was gin. I'm trying to even remember what else I put in it. Wasn't it gin and it was Midori and Blue Curacao and 7-Up maybe? Like Diet 7-Up? I don't know. Anyways, it was fucking awful.
Well, the way you describe it, it sounds like you put a pinch of doo-doo in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A pinch of
doo-doo. There's nothing like a pinch. You pinched a pinch. Oh, there's nothing like a bad cocktail. I'll never forget the worst one I ever had.
What was it?
Well, yeah.
Well, I want to take you to... No, I was going to do like a whole Sophia Golden Girl thing. But
picture it, Sicily.
I think I've talked about it actually before. It was something called a chocolate milkshake, and someone made it's tequila rose and God knows what else. And it was just, it made me want to weep when I sipped it.
Yeah, not in a good way.
Weep for the time before that I would never have back, when I was a sweet summer child that had never tasted that. And now I live on the other side of that. It's more like, you know, like in Tales from the Dark Side when they show the dark side in the intro.
Yeah.
Like, but there is
your world turned to black and white.
That's what I basically live in. Yeah. They flip the polarity on
even tequila in sweet tequila rose, isn't it? It just tastes like coffee creamer.
The tequila rose did not taste. I don't know what it tasted like all the bad things in the world
Yeah.
Just mixed together.
Mm-hmm. I find the older I get, the more I just want the alcohol by itself.
Give me the alcohol.
Tequila Usually. Rose is strawberry cream liqueur and tequila.
It does have tequila in it. Okay.
Tequila.
It's nasty. Stay away from
it. It is very nasty.
It's super sweet. But it's the worst thing. You know who, Andy, you would like it because you like,
Do you like drinking Pepto-Bismol?
He likes horchata.
With tequila?
You know what? I don't mind the taste of Pepto-Bismol. That's what they won the...
I like it.
Only bright spots of being sick as a child was Pepto-Bismol.
You like it?
Yeah.
It does. Well, pour some tequila in it. And
yeah.
I don't drink often, but when I do...
Do you guys know that Pepto-Bismol... I'm sorry, Andy. I was just going to say, it's essentially charcoal.
Yeah.
And if you take it long enough, you will shit pure black.
That happened to me.
White black.
When I was in Pike before, we did this show and I was sick. Like I had either food poisoning or some kind of stomach virus. And I didn't think I was going to be able to play. And the band was like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. We'll get you some Pepto-Bismol. And I got a little bit of stage health, but I took that little bottle of Pepto on stage with me and I was just chugging it all night because I felt awful. But I just was like, it was like a talisman. And it was like a small bottle, but I basically killed the whole thing. And I got home and I vomited and shit black and just...
That is so punk rock. You're chugging Pepto-Bismol on stage.
Where were you? Were you guys out of town?
It was at Mad Frog.
Oh, at least you were in town. And
no, thank God.
On the road.
It was really the only way I feel like I could have made it was being able to come right home.
Yeah. You're like, San Antonio, are you ready?
Oh, God. I can't do Pepto-Bismol really anymore after that, though.
Yeah.
It's not like I crave it, but I don't mind it.
No, that's what
it's your strange addiction.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, ooh, we need to get some more.
Oh, so great.
Put it in my martinis.
Yeah.
I just associate that flavor with being real sick. So I do not like it. Mm. And also, I don't like it, period.
Agree. You guys even if it had great connotations, you're like, every birthday, I got to chug down a big old cup of Pepto before I open my presents, and I still hate it.
You know, somebody out there is probably using it as a marinade right now because of quarantine, and they're just trying everything they have in their house.
Don't go to the medicine cabinet for culinary ideas.
Have you had my milk of magnesia shrimp yet?
It's an Alfredo.
It's like Alfredo.
I think Freddie just got promoted to Surgeon General.
Yeah, that's right. I'm hearing things about apparently if you marinate shrimp in milk of magnesia overnight, it kills it. We're looking into that. We're trying everything.
Throw it at the wall, see what sticks.
Yeah.
I have a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I've talked about it on the show a long time ago, but I've been rewatching Community on Netflix. Hot motherfucking damned, is that one of the most well-written comedies ever?
You and Colin are both watching it right
so
now.
So fucking good. I loved it then, but like I love it especially right now.
It was one of the all-time great sitcoms, I think. And it was so unique. Like that when that show came out, there had never really been anything quite like it.
Yeah.
What's great is like all the different cameos I had forgotten about, like Lisa Rinna, who is one of my favorite Real Housewives. And then Shangela shows up because she's got a pocket full of Hawthorns.
Yeah.
It's just a good time. So if you're looking for something fun and something that's going to absolutely distract you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, as somebody who's never seen Community, what makes it so great?
The writing. The writing is something beyond. And then the cast chemistry, like how well they all work together.
Right.
It's whimsical and heartfelt, but also kind of edgy.
Yeah.
It's super diverse where it's not just diversity for the sake of it, but like everyone brings something to the show that is they're all their own.
Yeah.
And that's like, and I'm talking like 6-7 particular characters that are bringing something that's just all them. And it blends so perfectly together.
It's like us.
Just like us. Look at them nipples.
Look at these. Even Andy's nipples, they bring something to the table.
I have a recommendation,
too. They made a cameo.
Yeah.
$35 cameo.
Ow.
from 20, there's a movie I've randomly found that was not like anything I'd ever seen a trailer for or ever seen advertised anywhere, but it's from a few years ago. It's called Dead Aunt, and it stars Tom Arnold, Sean Astin, Jake Busey. And if I don't know any Seinfeld fans out there, there's an actor in this you would probably recognize too, named Danny Woodburn, who is the little person who was on Seinfeld, and he is fantastic in this. It's a comedy about an 80s rock band. They're like a glam rock band, and they're kind of washed up, and they're going to play Coachella because they couldn't get into Coachella. And Tom Arnold's the band manager, and they hit the road out west. They take some bad peyote, and it involves that and giant ants. And it's just a fun movie.
It looks fun. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, it's free. You can watch it on Tubi TV. TUBI.TV.
I love Tubi TV.
Tubi TV is pretty fun. A lot of fun free shit on there.
Yeah, we're a Tubi family here.
Yeah,
a Tubi family.
Yeah, this to be or not to be.
To be.
Jake Busey as the leader of this, the lead singer of this band. They have him made up to look almost exactly like Bret Michaels, and Sean Astin is the bass player, and he's got this really bad long wig on, and it's just Sean Astin is just always adorable no matter what he does, but he's really fun in this. Everybody's really good. This is probably, it's not saying much to say that this is like my favorite Tom Arnold performance because I don't have like a large library of experience with him other than Roseanne. But his performance in this is like something for the books for him. It's really funny.
That's awesome. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. I really want to hear what you have to say about it.
And it's spelled A-N-T, not A-U-N-T, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dead Aunt. Yeah, because there's giant ants in it. Yeah.
Dead Aunt, Dead Aunt, Dead Aunt, Dead Aunt, Dead Aunt.
Ooh, good one, Amy.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's also like kind of an adventure movie. Like, it has moments in it where you're like, fuck yeah. Yeah.
Rock on.
I would have happily, had I seen this in the theater, I would have walked away like, I had a good time. I don't mind having spent that money.
Well, you say that often when you leave a movie theater.
A lot of times,
I had a good time.
I had a that was an adequate piece of entertainment. My blood pressure is lowered by 4%.
He's very literal about his words.
I am.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that.
He's a simple man.
It's just like a ritual.
Do you guys remember going to the movie theater?
Yeah, I do.
What was the last movie you guys saw in the theater?
I think we saw Invisible Man. I think that was the last one we
saw. Yeah, I was with you for that, wasn't
I?
Yeah.
The last one I saw was Frozen 2, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It's crazy.
Was it Rise of Skywalker?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
Thank you. It's like, I don't know what I've seen.
Yes, indeedy.
The theater.
The theater.
The theater.
Theater.
In a theater.
Remember how you were like, oh, I heard our theater's got bed bugs. I don't know if we should go there. I'd go there.
If it were just bed bugs.
If it was just bed bugs. Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, I missed you guys.
Oh my gosh, I missed worrying about that.
Bed bugs.
Those poor bed bugs are starving right now.
Yeah. Ah!
Sorry, right,
Freddie just scared everybody by sharing.
Oh,
screen.
Okay.
I didn't mean to scare you.
Yeah. Boo.
I thought something horrible happened.
Right.
No, just the usual horribleness.
Well, I think we've covered everything that we need to cover at the top.
All right.
So thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Just kidding. We'll be back shortly.
We will. As soon as
Freddie's ready. Hello, boys and girls. It's time for Straight to Video Russian Roulette.
So how long were you out there for?
I lost
track of the time.
Did you get bit?
This planet we're on is so sick of our shit. That's why the dead keep coming back to life.
You're immune. I'm not. What if my baby isn't either?
Run!
It's bad.
Ninagasi.
I heard that you could cure bites here.
Ain't nobody immune here but us.
One of them could come in here and infect this entire camp.
Behind you!
You wanna live?
Who says we're immune?
A duck jaw looks at humble. A wind sui looks at good.
Are we back?
Yeah.
We're back.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, girl.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, wee.
Ooh, wee.
Ooh, wee.
So, ooh, wee, Rick. Blood Quantum. So, this was an excellent movie. And I recommend it.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll go really into more detail.
I really like the title. It sounds like something from the 70s or 80s.
It's the title's great. First off, I want to say it's a Shudder original. And you know, back there was a time when getting your straight to video Russian roulette, it was a death sentence. You know, you basically thought it was a death sentence. And now, thanks to advancements, you know, I really get so many good movies from straight to video Russian roulette. I get more good than bad.
I'm so happy for you.
And this is a Shudder original, and it's an XYZ film, which they usually put out pretty good stuff. That them and IFC Midnight, and you know, obviously A24. But you know, they all have a lot of good stuff going for them. And so, Blood Quantum is it's a zombie movie. And as the trailer, there's this. I was trying to decide if I was going to spoil this one plot point, but in the actual IMDb synopsis, they spoil it, and in the it's not really a spoiler anyway. In this movie, we're on a native reservation in Canada, New Brunswick, and the dead things start coming back to life. There's a great, the opening scene is really, really awesome because it's this old fisherman and he kind of comes up onto the fucking, he brings his catch up and it's a few salmon and he brings them up and it's shot beautifully. The director, Jeff Barnaby, good eye, sir. Well done. It's beautifully shot. A lot of really great camera work. You know, it's got its own look and feel, but it's got a really big feel. I don't know that this had a great big budget, but it feels like it did. Like everything, it looks like all the budget is on the screen. The sets are great. The scenery is great. It's beautiful. The cast is awesome. So anyway, you got this old guy and he brings his catch up onto the shore and he starts gutting it, you know, getting it ready. And he's yanking the guts out of all these fish. And as he's halfway through, they start flopping around and they're obviously still move. All of them start flopping around. And that's kind of your beginning. And then you're sort of introduced to characters throughout and you're introduced to the chief trailer, who is played by Michael Gray Eyes. And what's awesome about this is it has a mostly native cast. So that's awesome to see. Like I said, everybody, there's one actor who went a little bit to Captain Rhodes, you know, but I think that was a deliberate choice. There were definitely a lot of, moments that honored past zombie movies in this, and even some kind of like Walking Dead inspiration, but turned to make it like better for the betterment. And so, yeah, he was very Captain Rhodesy. He even kind of looks like him. And he was maybe a little over the top, but not even bad.
I'm running this monkey farm now, Frankenstein, and I want to know what the fuck you're doing with my time.
Scared the piss out of me.
I just so happen to have that soundbite ready to go at any moment.
Well, that's exactly what he was, basically. And his name was Lysol, the character.
By the way, what a heroic he's name right now.
He's hard to find right now.
He is impossible to find.
I love him. I'd do anything for him.
So the chief, he's the chief of police, is this guy Trailer, and he's getting calls from his dispatcher, who the voice, the actor who plays her is also, she's a great, great dame. And she has a great voice, because for the most part, you're only hearing her. And but you hear her throughout, kind of giving him like reports as he's dealing with his own personal thing, which is his son with his ex-wife just got picked up and arrested. And he's like a troubled kid, but a good, smart kid. And the real problem is that he's with his older brother, Lysol, who is his half brother from the chief's first marriage, who is just trouble and an asshole. A self called us asshole. I forgot how to say that word for a second. I had to find my way back to it.
You forgot asshole.
I did.
That's sad.
It fell right out of my asshole. So anyway, there, like, it's a lot of the great stuff that you love from beginning, you know, the beginning of a zombie kind of thing. There's early moments of weird shit happening, and it's all very spooky. It's very somber. It takes itself, you know, it takes the story seriously. And then there's a moment where it's kind of obvious what's going on, and I love this moment. And again, I hope I'm not spoil. I don't think this spoils anything again, but there's this moment where sort of these native men kind of come together to like, because they've seen like these different things across the reservation, and they kind of come together, and there's like this great thing about them not disbelieving what they see, like where they're just like, looks like the dead are coming, like, and not in a silly way or like a, let's just get this exposition out of the way. Like it was just really cool where they just sort of accepted what they were seeing and were just like, this is what we got to deal with, and this is how we're going to do it. And so the twist that I wasn't necessarily going to spoil is that the natives are not affected. They cannot turn into zombies. Bit, not bit. They are immune to becoming actual zombies. But as one of them points out poignantly, to a white person who wants to come in later, they're not immune to being eaten alive. So,
yeah.
It becomes this great kind of thing. I mean, again, very prescient. I think everything we've been watching lately is super prescient. It becomes this thing about letting people in, whether to let people in or wall them out. And in both just kind of the climate we've had over the last 4 years with sort of the things that have been happening with immigration, and then also the pandemic, it really is kind of a double whammy. I don't want to really spoil anything else about this movie. The characters are really great. There are some moments of humor, and there are some definite fun, like over the top gore moments, but it is a pretty solemn, serious, grounded story. Mm-hmm. And it's really good, and it has interesting themes, and I really highly recommend it. I'd watch it again. Everyone, Elise and Colin, watched it with me. Everybody really couldn't have enough good things to say about it.
Well, that's so awesome. Nice.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I might check it out myself.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I remember
you. I like that. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I just remember how tentative when we heard the title, we're all like,
Blood Quantum. Yeah.
I would like to buy one quantum of blood.
Just don't judge
for my mask title.
Gold press blood quantum.
But Kat, I like your description. Like you said, it was somber, but you still had a good time with it.
Oh yeah, that they really they nailed that balance. I really hope that this team and this director do some more stuff, because it really felt, I mean, it felt like one of these good rich kind of horror movies that we've been getting lately.
They did make another movie prior to this. That's it's a thriller, like a crime movie. And it looks like it's a lot of the same people were involved, called Rhymes for Young Ghouls.
I like that title.
I do too. I may check that out.
But sometimes like horror movies, they take them way too seriously and they're not fun.
Exactly.
I don't want to compare movies, but that's the problem I had with The Quiet Place. It just took itself so seriously.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun for me.
I can see that.
It was just a drag for me. But I like when they have the balance of, you know, taking itself seriously while having fun too.
I feel like
I'd be interested to see what you think about this. There's a lot of great action too. A lot of great crazy action in it.
Not to get deeply into A Quiet Place, but I just wanted to say I've always felt like A Quiet Place was like a horror movie for people that don't like horror movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was more like, it was kind of like, hey, you know what? This is kind of a horror movie.
Wink.
You know?
Wasn't A Quiet Place 2 supposed to come out?
It's still coming out.
It got delayed.
Okay.
With everything else.
Right.
I don't see how you make a sequel to that personally, but then again, I've watched hundreds of terrible sequels.
Johnny Cross is doing it, boy. He's bringing it.
Yeah.
It's true. All right, gang.
J. Kras.
That's better. I like that better. Let's port it over to that.
Okay. We'll shift all of our resources behind that.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
Let's get the Jag the Bugs out and start a cranking.
Please.
Up first is Andy.
Crank, crank, crank.
Like Andy made it out okay.
It did not.
You know what? I have to say that I haven't been getting a lot of Rush Willis movies lately, and I'm kind of upset about it.
Do you want this one? Do you want to volunteer as tribute?
I volunteer. I mean, nobody. If you guys want me to, I'll do it. But sure. I just noticed.
Is it?
I haven't been getting a lot.
Is it shitty if we wait until we see what it is?
No.
What are you having for dinner? What are you having?
Well, all right. Andy, here's
the sound.
Tribute.
This is the sound that we make whenever someone actually volunteers.
You know what, Andy? I'm gonna let you do this. It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh no!
Well, not
necessarily. Just kidding. It's kidding. No.
It's called Scare Me.
Scare Me. Okay. I will.
A group of college students ride share to a music festival and have a campfire story competition on the way.
Well, that sounds kind of fun.
That sounds fun. It's like an anthology, sounds like.
Well, as the stories progress, the tensions rise as they realize they are in a story of their own.
Oh, no, they're all dead, aren't they?
I don't know. Starring Mark Justice.
Oh, wow.
And Caslyn Rose. I don't know who those people are, but I'm sure they're lovely, unless they're not. Was that important to do?
It was important
to
me.
What was that for?
You're frightened by those names.
Yeah, it's a scary movie.
So Andy will review Scare Me.
Scared by those real names.
You're so scared. Andy's so scared.
Alrighty, I guess we'll just move on to the main attraction.
Let's move on.
Let's do it. The main attraction. Satisfaction guaranteed to rock the chains that bind you. Oh, oh, oh.
Death, personalized by the motion picture screen's Prince of Horror, Vincent Price.
Garotto.
No, I beg of you, mercy, mercy.
With the Devil's Own Darling, Hazel Court.
Lord Satan, send me a demon so I may know I'm to be your wife.
And a lost, virginal angel of innocence, Jane Asher.
I want to help save your soul so you can join me in the glories of hell.
No, never!
She's a woman cursed by Satan's seneschal, whose very existence turns the white rose blood red.
Diamonds, rubies, emeralds, pearls!
Lavishly, he plants his corrupting seeds of sin, spreading living terror that not even the unsullied can escape. Nor can one who craves all the forbidden pleasures of the depraved.
Each man creates his own heaven, his own hell.
Let me see your face.
Hello, are we back? Are we recording? Are things happening?
We are. I got to unmute Kelly. There we go.
Oh.
Hey, The Mask of the Red Death from 1964, Roger Corman. A lot of people are surprised to hear that Roger Corman directed this movie.
It's really well directed.
It's well directed. it doesn't look cheap.
I didn't care for the lighting.
It wasn't schlocky.
Right. It's not a schlocky movie. But... what to keep in mind is he was in England using a leftover set from a high budget movie.
It looked like a Hammer movie or something.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like these American international films for me do Hammer sometimes better than Hammer.
Yeah, they do feel like Hammer movies.
Yeah. But with better sets.
The thing that was most interesting, and I had never watched this entire movie. I didn't know that Nicholas Ragg was the DP on this, the cinematographer. So he directed The Wicker Man, The Witches, Don't Look Now. So I think a lot of what you see in this is his influence too, in the way it looks.
Ah, you may be right.
I'm really happy we decided to watch this.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise, actually.
I feel like this is sort of a Harry Potter vis-a-vis troll thing. I feel like George R. R. Martin pulled some, I think he's watched this movie a time or two. Even the word Unsullied is in the trailer.
Yeah.
And you've got a weird Sansa character. You've got Tyrion Lannister running around.
I hadn't thought about those comparisons, so you're bringing them up now.
Yeah, even when Hop Toad, who is the Tyrion Lannister's type character that Kelly's talking about, he has like a moment with what was the guy's name, Alfredo?
Yeah,
where
he's delicious.
He is. I made a joke about creamy. That too. We were watching Andy. I was like, they named the sauce after him. It's a fact. but what was the guy who Tyrion was always hanging out with, the bald eunuch?
Viserys, yeah.
Yeah, like I got a real that vibe from their interaction when they're setting up for the ball and they're having
discussion. Yeah.
Like early, like season one, season two, Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It was very much like that. I mean, I don't know that I think there's a strong argument to be made that character inspired that other character.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the brief setup is
Prince Prospero is a fucking dick.
He's an asshole.
He goes to he's going to the village to be like, hey guys, gonna have a fucking party for you, and they're like, could you just, I don't know, stop being an asshole to us?
It's very much like a Trump rally situation.
Let us live better instead of going to your dumb stupid party. And he's like, nah. And then he's like, oh shit, y'all got the plague here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and say, fuck all y'all. Yeah.
You know what I like about this plague? It's so obvious that they have it.
Oh, yeah.
Because you get real wet.
Yeah, you get red and wet.
Yeah.
They should have called it the red wet.
Oh, but
you know, now walking around now, you don't know who has coronavirus.
That's right.
This, is obvious.
And it's instant. And it kills you almost right away, which is nice.
Yeah. Like, he's just like, burn it all down and kill him. And his little lackeys are like, okay.
Yeah, this film that was adapted, the screenplay was Charles Beaumont. I'm a huge Charles Beaumont fan. You guys know he wrote for The Twilight Zone, tons of Twilight Zone. We covered The Howling Man.
That is a rich name if I ever heard one.
Charles Beaumont.
You know what's terrible about Charles Beaumont?
Chucky Beaumont.
He died at age 38 from Alzheimer's disease.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Isn't that awful? But had he lived a longer life, he also wrote Brain Dead, which was just featured on The Last Drive-In. I would just kind of wonder, like, had he lived longer, what we would have seen.
Yeah.
Because he was just a great writer. He wrote 22 episodes of The Twilight Zone, and they were like some of the best ones. He was also a good, he wrote some short stories and stuff.
He pulled in, the story Hoptoad into this and a little bit of Pit in the Pendulum.
Yeah.
So before Prince Prospero burns his serf's village down, he's like, you hot chick, I'll take you and your brother or your father and your lover.
Yeah.
I'm going to make them sit in my dungeon and die.
The father looks a lot like Judd Hirsch.
Did anybody else see that?
Yeah, no, I did.
And then later he looked like Anthony Garcia. Is that who I was thinking?
I guess. I'm not in your brain.
Godfather 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I'm talking about.
Like, yeah,
he's just that. I know I read The Mask of the Red Death. I don't remember anything about it. I read The Pit and the Pendulum. I don't remember anything about it. So anything I say, like, just know I haven't read those in a very long time. But he's such a caricature of the bad lord, you know.
The short story is not as complex. It's basically in the story, the prince sets up the masquerade ball. He has the different colored rooms and nobody will go into the black room. And then in the end of the short story, he has the character of death. He makes him unmask, and as soon as he unmasks, he dies. And then they go over and the clothes are empty. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Kind of. It's really simple story. I mean, there's not a lot to the original story. Unless I might be forgetting something, but I don't think, and in every other element in here, I think you can credit Charles Beaumont for bringing that stuff in and molding it. He did have a co-writer on this, R. Wright Campbell, who wrote a lot of Westerns.
He sounds like he does.
Well, I'm All Right Campbell. They call me All Right Campbell.
All right.
And I love cowboys. There's two things I love, cowboys and alfalfa for my horses.
You know, he's okay. You know, he's all right.
He's not great.
Yeah, he's just okay.
This movie, I discovered a new kink from this movie.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
And it's making my friends pretend to be farm animals fully clothed on the floor.
Have you watched Succession, the series on HBO that has all this buzz about it? It's a great show. But when we were watching this, when he tells him to be the pig and everything, that happens in Succession. Brian Cox's character does that to people and who work for him.
Yeah.
There's this whole corporate retreat episode that is like this movie.
Oh shit. Is it deliberate? Like, is it like a deliberate?
I feel like it was a callback to this movie, but I can't be sure. Wow. What was that dramatic sound?
That noise.
It wasn't from here.
Did you guys hear it?
Yeah, I heard it. It was like, it's funny you bring that scene up, Kelly, because I just felt so grossed out by it.
It is gross, even though, everybody's like, but it's just
there's something about rich people having fun that just bothers me.
Yeah. But, it's the way that they go for it. They're just like, as long as I can keep eating and kissing and drinking and having a party.
Yeah.
Whatever you want, dude.
Yeah.
I will debase myself so I continue to get the things.
But it was like Caligula or something, or it made me remind me of that scene from Requiem for a Dream, the ass to ass scene.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
Because you just have these gross people just taking enjoyment at the expense of others.
Yeah.
It just made me feel slimy.
How'd you guys feel about the body lady? You know,
it was what?
The real body lady that kept like, she's like,
The one that made her, the one that was a donkey at the end.
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about?
Like, ride that donkey.
I was like, you're gonna ride that donkey. Donk.
Now, has Prospero taken the girl? What was her name again?
Oh,
Fiona Apple.
Is it Juliana?
Juliana, yeah.
No, Juliana.
Oh, no, Juliana's the one, the bride of Satan.
Francesca?
Francesca's the one he brings.
He's just bringing her basically because he thinks she is pure and good.
And he wants to corrupt her.
Corrupt her, that's it.
Well, it's funny, I'm sorry, go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, by the way, trivia fact, Jane Asher was Paul McCartney's longtime live-in girlfriend before Linda McCartney. They lived together for years.
And Paul McCartney was on the set when they made this movie.
Yeah?
He had to leave because he had a big show to do in America.
A big shoe.
Really big shoe.
Because this was before the Ed Sullivan Show. Wasn't the Ed Sullivan Show in 64?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure it was.
I think you're right.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's going to take her, corrupt her, and like keep her at bay, I guess, by having her father and boy toy Gino.
Yeah. I like the dungeon scenes. Well, one, they reminded me of the queue for Pirates of the Caribbean.
A little bit, yeah.
At Disney World. And that made my heart weep a little.
Yeah.
But I'd love the guards playing cards. That rhymes. And having like the crusts of bread and cheese laying around the table and the grog they're drinking and everything, because it
looks like Dungeons and Dragons.
That's exactly it, Kelly. It looks like a Dungeons and Dragons game. There's just moments in this that visually are so just satisfying because they're so pure.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. It really is. It's interesting that you'd said that about the DP, because I was saying, as we watched it, I was like, man, I don't know why Roger Corman's such a maligned director. When he wants to, he can really make something beautiful. It's almost like Cecil B. DeMille.
Yeah, I do like Roger Corman movies, but not this. To me, is it doesn't look anything like anything else he did.
Yeah, I feel like I got to go watch Pit and the Pendulum now.
It's pretty good. I want to say he did that in The Raven. I can't remember. He did the Usher too. He did the Fall of House of Usher. Or he might have just called his movie House of Usher or something like that.
Yeah,
it's called Usher.
Usher.
So, like, he's kind of introducing Francesca to his debauchery, and he's got
satanic
this
satanic lifestyle.
Mm-hmm, you know, and he's like, Satan's cool.
We're bros.
We're like this, you know.
He kind of has a nice respect for her, though. Like where. When he asked her about the cross, he's like, do you wear that for whimsy or in earnest? And she's like, I believe in it. And he goes, well, then take it off.
Yeah.
And then like as throughout the movie, he talks to her as if she's his equal.
Yeah. Well, there's a funny thing. I think it's funny that they paint like the villain, a lot of what he says is just sort of like humanist.
Yeah.
And like, it's about like believing in the truth, not in like, you know,
yeah,
faith-based stuff. But it's painted in this like light of those are horrible things and they make you want to torture people.
Yeah. Well, the theme of this, when we get to the end, that kind of speaks to kind of an interesting theme that is in this, that Beaumont had a lot of weird like religious stuff and stuff about the devil in a lot of his writing and whether the devil was real or not, essentially. But yeah, this relationship with Francesca and the prince is an interesting one. It's not just a damsel in distress thing. It is some of that, but there is moments where it feels like they are in some sort of intellectual butting of heads like throughout the movie.
Who is Juliana? Like, really help me understand what her character is in this
She
movie.
Is the first Francesca, is the way I read into it. Like, I think
yeah,
she's
same.
Another woman that Prince Prospero brought to the castle, but she drank the Kool-Aid. And I think she became, like, really into the idea of becoming the bride of the devil.
So then he's, like, gross.
Yeah, like, he lost interest in her, I think, because she didn't. Because
she's fully corrupted and done and.
Right.
Lame.
Yeah.
On your behalf, Prince.
Yeah. Well, I think his like corruption of Francesca almost worked, didn't it?
Almost,
because she gave up. Yeah.
Yeah. Near the end, like when they were saying goodbye, there was this longing look in her eyes. Like, no, don't make me go.
Yeah.
So
don't make this old enough to be my father. What?
I just made a weird laugh.
Oh. Yeah. So Juliana gets all the way through to a vision, I guess, some sort of like
she has this vision of all of these different religious icons. Like there's like a Haitian priest, there's like Japanese, Chinese, dirty knees, look at these. No, there's all of these different caricatures of these different religious icons, like dancing, and there's this choreographed number where they're appearing to her in this vision. And I think that this scene is what I think ties into the commentary that I think he was going for in the end of the movie, is that you're seeing all of these things. It's that whole, that religion is pointless kind of, but I think that was a kind of a dangerous concept at the time they made this movie. And I think they kind of, they buried it in like art, you know, and in dance, and like made it where they're like, oh, maybe we're saying this and maybe we aren't. But the thing
is, it wasn't blatant the way that he was getting his message across.
And in the end of the movie, when the prince has the conversation with the mask of the Red Death, he says, it's essentially the death says, all that stuff isn't real. That's just man's way of coping with me. I am the one real thing and I'm inevitable.
He's like Thanos.
Yeah, he is like Thanos.
Exactly, Andy.
Like a big red
Thanos. But during this hallucination scene, I really liked the music and the way they executed it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If any of you are classical music fans, the music sounds a lot like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring.
Yeah, it does kind of have that vibe. I always thought that was like super kind of creepy in and of its own right, too. If you watch Strange Angel, that CBS All Access series about
I call it Strangel.
Strangel, yep. That's what Amy calls it, too.
I always make him repeat himself.
It's Mind Freak with Chris Strangel.
It's a show about Jack Parsons and Caltech, and about how he was part of the Golden Dawn with Aleister Crowley and all those fun people. But a big part of it has to do with Tchaikovsky's Rite of Spring and like that piece of music plays into
Stravinsky.
It.
Stravinsky.
What did I say?
Tchaikovsky.
Oh, whoops. Yvonne Stravinsky.
You're embarrassing me right now, Freddie.
Sorry, Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky. Stravinsky was like a more modern composer.
Right? Yeah. Tchaikovsky was more classical, Stravinsky was like kind of pushing the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, they were like 100 years apart at least, right? Am I thinking right?
Not too far apart actually.
But yeah.
I did think I liked that there was some the scene where Hop Toad burns Alfredo to death in the bear suit was actually pretty hardcore.
Yeah, it was very Game of Thronesy.
Yeah.
That actually, apparently, that Hop Toad story about, like, that's based on something that actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you heard the story about, like, the three noblemen that chained themselves together for a costume ball or something?
Yeah, I used to have a collection of Edgar Allan Poe that it like had that as it like in the annotation or whatever. It kind of talked about where it came from.
Yeah, that they sparked somehow something and set themselves on fire, and they were all, since they were all tied to one another, they burned to death.
Yeah.
And then in this, you know, it's the big gorilla suit, classic gorilla suit, which
do they have gorilla suits in the Middle Ages?
That's what I was wondering.
It was a very well done costume.
It's a good gorilla
suit. That was the Patterson Gimlin Bigfoot suit, actually.
Like, I'm pretty sure that mask was made out of plastic, which they definitely didn't have in the Middle Ages.
I love
this. It was probably made out of real gorilla, like a Mr. Burns's.
This is where I think, like you were saying about George R. R. Martin maybe taking some influence from this too, because early in the film, Hop Toad and the Tiny Dancer, which I wonder if Elton John came up with Tiny Dancer.
Yep, came right from here.
From this. I mean, because they call her the Tiny Dancer.
Yeah.
But anyways, which is a super creepy element in this movie to begin with, which I want to go back to. But the reason this happens in the third act is in the first act, Alfredo hits the tiny dancer for knocking over his wine. He strikes her, and you can see Hoptoad is going for his dagger, and then he hesitates and waits. So then he gets his revenge. Like, this whole time, he's probably stewing on this plan. And yep. In the third act, you get this awesome, again, like, it feels very reminiscent of, like, moments from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Where they get this, like, revenge is a dish best served cold in really brutal fashion.
When it's also, like, in that when Alfredo first sees it, like, he kind of gets, there's, like, this whole kind of pedophile vibe going where he really obviously wants to bang her. And Prospero makes a comment about, well, you want to bang anything that looks, like, innocent. And, you know, he says, yeah, because you want to fuck a kid. So you want to fuck that thing.
Yeah,
it's like it almost makes him angry when she spilled. Like, it's like getting called out for that. Like, also, like, makes him angry at her. You know?
Yeah, it's super gross. That character. Yeah. The way they cast, I couldn't tell. Amy and I were talking about this, where we're like, is that a little person playing the part?
It was hard to tell.
Her face looked like a child.
She was a child, but what they did was they used ADR to give her an adult voice. It reminded me. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, so it was an actual child as opposed to a little person.
Yeah, she was like 11 or 12 years old.
Oh, okay.
Which even makes it even creepier. And then the dubbing of the adult voice, it was a lot like that. Do you guys remember?
That was very obvious. Well, yeah. dubbing.
Did you watch the old episode of Star Trek with Clint Howard when he was a little boy?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
He has the man voice, and it reminded me so much of that. And that always it made my skin crawl, even though that's supposed to be like a cute, likable character. It was still unsettling to me.
So he's gonna, he's trying to seduce Francesca to the dark side by showing her his differently colored rooms, and giving her nice things.
Mm-hmm.
But Juliana, I think, is jealous and also marrying the devil. But she ends up getting attacked by, is it birds?
Like a falcon, wasn't it?
His falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she dies. You know, but Prospero's like, party must go on.
Yeah. Her death scene brought up a fear I have of being killed by little things.
Yeah.
Because it's just horrifying to me that such a small thing can kill you. Or like, remember that scene from Shark Night? And that was a dumb analogy, but when that girl just got bitten to death by those tiny, tiny little sharks.
No, I don't remember anything from Shark Night.
Or Jurassic World Part 3.
Procomps and Athids in Part 2.
With those the tiny dinosaurs when they swarmed that guy.
Or they're creeping up
Peter Stormare.
Yeah. Just being sworn by tiny things that you should be able to fight off is just terrifying to me.
Hmm. You know, falcons aren't tiny, though, so you're okay with that one.
They're not tiny, but you think you should be able to fight something off like that, but it's just scary.
I don't know about a falcon. They're pretty big, and they've got pretty big talons, but if I see what you're saying.
If you can get their wings, I think you'd be okay.
Well, maybe, but they're pretty fast.
Well, Freddie told us a story yesterday about how this lady got killed by a French bulldog.
Yeah. Did you hear about this, Kelly?
Yeah, but that was a pretty big bulldog. Like, did you see it? It was like...
No, she was a small lady. I know that, but I don't know. Like, how big can a French bulldog get?
Well, that's what Elise had said, that she was pretty surprised because it looked mighty big for a French bulldog. Like, it was supposed to be like 50 pounds or something, which she thought was way too big for most really French big. Bulldogs.
Yeah. Yeah, when you think French bulldog, you think about like 20 pounds or something.
Right. Yeah. They're almost like purse dogs.
Yeah, they're very tiny.
Jay Pritchard had one on Modern Family.
So, you know, crazy shit's going on, but guess what? We have to have our masquerade. The villagers even try to show up and go, there's only six of us left. Can we please find some mercy here? And Prospero is like, you idiots. And then he kills all of them. Like, there's nobody left of the village because of the plague and because of his telling them to burn it down.
Yeah.
But you guys, he's like, I already got the caterer set. I've already got my costume for tonight. I'm really excited to show. I've already told everybody not to wear red. Like, what am I going to do?
I've got all this shrimp salad.
But it was just so brutal because he didn't think twice about it. He was just like, shoot him. Yeah. And they did. Well, this guy's just so gross.
Even when his friend Scarlatti or whatever his name was shows up.
Oh yeah, like another like noble person shows up, and he's like, "I really want to come live here. I'll even let you do whatever you want with my wife."
And he's like, "Ha ha! I've already done what I want with your wife.
Now I've become the monarch."
I gotta say, I'm really enjoying it, Kelly. So.
It is good.
Not the girlfriend.
Well, he begs him, Scarlatti says, spare me from the plague. So what does Prince Prospero do? But he shoots him with a crossbow.
He's like, I spared him.
And then he tosses a dagger to the guy's wife and is like, he's like, spare yourself from the plague. I can't do it like Kelly does, but...
Were they deliberately trying to make Scarlatti look like he already had it? Because he was like real pale and clammy looking. Like he was kind
of
like...
That's just a look of wealth, I think, in this era.
I got you.
too many gooses.
Like, remember,
too many turnips. Too many braces of conies.
Used to be like fair skin. Like if you had any sun, that you were low class because you were working outside.
Yeah. Lots of lamprey pie.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Suckling pig.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Suckling exactly. pig. Mm-hmm. So they party's on, bro.
Yeah.
And shit gets real. Oh, meanwhile, Gino has escaped.
Prior to his escape, there's the five daggers. And one of them is impregnated with poison that will kill you in 5 seconds.
Everything kills very quickly during these Middle Ages.
Yeah. So it's a great, like, it's like almost like a Russian roulette scene where the prince lays out the daggers and says, we're just going to let fate take care of this. Each of you select a dagger, cut yourself, wait 5 seconds. If you die, you lose. And it gets down to the final dagger, and the dad has it, and he realizes it's the poison dagger, and he turns to stab the prince with it. The prince was ready for him and kills him with a sword.
Yeah.
And this is the moment when Gino escapes, right?
Sure. I don't know.
Somewhere around this moment. He escapes, encounters the Red Death.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of sits in for him at whatever the Red Death was up to already, right? He's like, he goes and he's like a substitute for him, where he's sitting under the tree doing the tarot.
Yeah.
He's like, can you stay here? I'm going to go deal with this thing I got to do at the castle. And you just read these tarot cards. And he's like, I'm Gino.
Too many people aren't going to come by. Okay, man. It's not going to be a big deal. It's not going to take too long, man. Just like sit here and be groovy.
Then 20 hours later, it's like, oh, I'm back.
Yeah.
So, I didn't put you out, did I?
So Gino's dressed up like the Red Death now, right? And the Red Death's gone up to the castle, and he has a big Ned Flanders mustache as part of his plague mask thing.
It's like gold fringe.
Yeah. I love that thing. I love that he had that.
It's some.
And he goes up to the party. He's spotted by the prince. I love through most of this movie, Vincent Price is wearing like these really tight brown tights. He's wearing tight tights.
You don't even have to say tight.
And like he has these little spindly legs, which he needed like a whole lot more cape to hide that.
Why do you keep looking at my legs?
It was just a kind of a funny look. He looked like the Purple Pie Man from the Strawberry Shortcake show.
Maybe this inspired that too.
I think so.
The peculiar Purple Pie Man of Porcupine Peak.
He sounds like him too.
He does with his little hat, his little purple hat.
I wonder if that was him.
Oh my God. This movie is everywhere.
So
it's embedded in our culture.
It's everything.
It's a household name. The Mask of the Red Death.
We didn't know it.
So yeah, all this leads up to the Red Death coming through the party dance floor and the prince spotting him and being furious because he told no one, he said, absolutely no one wear red. And even though the color that they use, that Pathé color process, made other costumes look like they had red in them.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that too?
Yeah, but I wasn't sure.
I don't know if that was just a mistake when they did the the color balance or something, but, or if that was a continuity error, but like maybe he meant no one wear completely red costumes, but there were people out there with a lot of red in their costume is all I'm saying.
They're like, it's orange, I swear.
And this is where the story becomes, the film becomes more like the short story at this point.
Is.
So they, the prince pursues the Red Death through the multicolored rooms until he gets to the final room where the Red Death is unmasked. And it is Prince Prospero's face. And this
Oh,
can you believe it?
The fuck?
It's in the trailer even.
Yeah,
it is.
He says to the prince, why should you be afraid to die? Your soul has been dead for a long, long time.
So true.
And he, this is where they have the conversation where the prince says, but Satan rules the universe. I made a pact with him.
But I'm covered. I totally got my dude. And he said, I'm in the club and I don't have to pay a cover.
And the man in red says, he does not rule alone and your pact will not save you.
Oh,
there is no other god. Satan killed him. This is the prince saying that. And then the man in red says, each man creates his own god for himself, his own heaven, his own hell. And then Prospero, this is when he says, let me see your face. And he snatches away the mask and there is Vincent Price's face. Says, your hell, Prince Prospero, and the moment of your death.
And he fails the Jedi test.
Yeah. So is the symbolism here is that you, the Red Death is in, you've gotten it, whatever the plague is.
Yeah. In general, the Red Death is really, I think that's, it's almost a MacGuffin.
Using the plague as a,
just a way for people to rapidly confront death one after another and then, and like deal with the concept of heaven, hell, religion and all that stuff.
Or it's like saying like nobody's safe. Like we're all, that's what the one thing we have in common, that we're all going to die and your riches is not going to save you from the inevitable.
So yeah, no matter what your god is, the Red Death is going to get you either way.
And so the rhythm.
You can very, very easily put Donald Trump in this situation, right?
Well, it's like the red hat is like the Red Death now. It's a symbol of rottingness.
And he's like, but I'm going to keep telling you that everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. This virus is going to go away. We're going to have the best vaccines. Don't even worry about it, which is the masquerade.
We'll just wait it out in our castles.
We'll just wait it out here where I can get tested every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And everything's fine.
It's funny you bring up the Trump comparison, because when the prince saw the red, he threw such a tantrum about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that is such a Trump thing to do.
Little bitch. Which
to mention, his bathtub.
Just a little bitch move,
When they showed the bathtub when Francesca first comes to the castle and they're cleaning her up, she's in a bathtub that looks like it was right out of Trump's apartment.
Oh, for sure.
I have to say, I love that bathtub, though. It had gold.
Did you?
Just because it was so fucking tacky.
Yeah, it was.
It had like gold swans on either side, and it's just so like stereotypical luxurious, like lifestyles of the rich and famous or something.
The water did look really hot though. Like there was steam coming off of it, and I was like, that looks like a nice soak.
This masquerade is going to be huge.
I read an article recently. Well, I didn't read the article, but like I looked at the headline.
You read the comments.
It was good enough. No, never read the comments. About how the wealthy parts of Manhattan just cleared the fuck out when the shit hit the fan with the virus, how they just fled and left the city to the people who couldn't do that.
Yeah, they went to like the Hamptons or something and took all the resources from the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just awful. It's like, this story was written by Poe back in whenever the hell that was, 100-something plus like years ago.
1800s sometime.
Yeah, like 1840.
It's a timeless story, Amy. The rich are trash.
And people are just doomed to keep being trash. It's like, be better. Be best.
Be best. Be best.
Damn be best. It.
Also, Poe was only 40 when he died.
I know.
Is that like a good age for his time?
No. He was young then, too.
He was just a crazy old drunk.
He looked much older near the end, like much older.
Well, as much as I'm drinking during this quarantine.
Yeah, we're all going to become 50. Yeah, that's the thing about plagues is they come around every so often. Like, it's cyclical. We deal with them as a species, and now we're in the middle of another one.
But the end with all the colorful babies in their robes.
Yeah.
Death babies.
I love that.
I love this scene. Cool. Yeah. I like how they were talking shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, one of the deaths comes up, and I'm like, oh, I'm exhausted. I just took 10,000 souls.
Yeah. And they're all the different colors are, I think, are supposed to represent different plagues. Hmm. The Red Death was like a made up disease. It seems like almost like Ebola to me.
Ebola.
I heard somebody say it was rabies. I don't know where they got that
from. The fact that they're sweating and like oozing like that, it makes you think of Ebola, but I don't know a lot of diseases. I don't know a lot about diseases.
Well, it's totally fictional disease anyway, so it doesn't really...
Well, I'm learning right now.
You can imprint whatever you want on the Red Death in this, but we call it the wetness, the red wetness. but all of them like are supposed to be different plagues. That's the different colors, I guess.
I want the purple one. What's that?
The purple plague?
I want the purple plague.
Oh, that's where your tits fall off and then they come to life and strangle you.
Never mind. Well,
so
if my choices,
fun though.
If my choices are the Black Death, Ebola, or my tits falling off and trying to strangle me.
Yeah. At least you can run away from
me. At least
them.
I can run away from my tits.
So at the end, all the deaths are walking away together. Where do you think they're going? They all live together in a
They're
house.
Going to O'Charlie's for drinks.
Oh my God, I want that reality show.
They love those chicken tenders.
Yeah, the bread though.
No, they go to the Mexican restaurant down the way that where you can get the big pitcher of margaritas. It's the best. Oh,
they all share.
Yeah. And they don't have to worry about social distancing.
They don't. Uh-huh. That's the benefit of being a death.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were, that shot is what I used for the show art. Is the walking along.
It's beautiful.
It is. Yeah. Don't you love just the use of color?
It's a gorgeous movie.
Do you remember when filmmakers were excited about using color because it was something new?
Mm-hmm.
And they were excited about using well, they still are pretty excited about using widescreen lenses, but like they use the shit out of a wide lens in this and they use the shit out of color. And now people like they drain most of the movies, unless you're talking about like, you know, Wes Anderson movies or Marvel movies, a lot of them are just draining the color out. They're becoming more and more like monotonous palettes. And
They like to desaturate.
Yeah. And the bleach bypass process is like one of the things I really hate, except for in Saving Private Ryan. It looked good in that, but otherwise it just makes your movie dull.
I did have one bugaboo. I thought it was too well lit.
Yeah.
And I get why, but I wanted it to be like a castle, so flickering candlelight.
Oh, you wanted
it was so fucking bright. I'm like, who turned the fluorescence on?
I like that it looked like a Star Trek original series.
That's true. Episode. It did. It really did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like they're looking for realism in this type of story, you know?
Oh no, I mean with choreographed dancing.
I wanted flickering candlelight.
I love Vincent Price's dramatic. That he does when
at the end where all the like the dancers are swarming him and touching him,
and he's doing like it's very stagey, like the big performance that he does there.
Somebody I would love to see that scene without music.
Yeah.
those videos where they like dancing in the street where they just add in all the squeak sounds of their shoes. those are great.
That's the moment he's going through this crowd of people touching him.
Yeah,
they gave him the plague.
You
can't trust
it was
nobody.
In there the whole time.
You can't go out.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the shit out of this movie.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad we own it because it was cheaper to just buy it instead of renting it three times. But it's one. I'm glad we have it because I think I'll go back and watch it again. I just really liked it a lot.
I think it'd be a great something to watch during like October or something.
Yeah.
Good atmosphere.
For sure. Very cozy movie.
I'd like to, when we can, put it on the big screen in the backyard, like put on the biggest screen we've got and just go to town and eat popcorn.
Just go
and
to
dance.
Town.
And we could dance. We could dance around the backyard.
Andy, can we learn the choreography? Yeah.
If you guys haven't looked at the movie poster for this, the one that has look into his face and it has the drawing of Vincent Price, like look at that poster and like zoom in on it because it's a really cool image where you can see all kinds of things going on in his face, like scenes of death and the different gods and stuff that were in the movie. And a lot of times I know that I'd seen this poster before and never realized all that was going on in the artwork, but it's a really cool poster.
I thought.
No, go ahead.
Nope.
Oh, like Freddie brought up his face, and I thought near the end, like Vincent Price's performance with like no words, it looked like a silent film at times. Just the way it, like the way it was expressed without like saying anything.
Yeah, he gave good face.
He emotes.
The credits, the end credits.
Oh yeah,
those are great. With the hand putting the tarot cards out. I don't know that I've seen a movie that old do something funky in the credits. I'm sure this wasn't the first. I just was surprised by it.
Yeah, this was kind of the era when that kind of started happening. Yeah. Where especially, it's, a lot of it was, again, it was those people, they're so excited about having, in this case, they call it Pathacolor or Technicolor, and just using it throughout. But I love, it almost looks like the hands and the cards were just hand-drawn.
They were, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was just a high contrast, like, film of somebody's hand moving those cards. But it looks like they're drawn with, like, black ink. Mm-hmm. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Just a cool fucking movie, huh?
Yeah, it is. Agreed.
So fucking cool. All right, we did it. Yeah.
All right.
So next time, we will be watching John Carpenter's They Live.
You can join me in the future. Yeah.
This is a movie that I hadn't, we haven't covered on the show. I've seen it many times. I love the movie.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised we haven't covered. Too. Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't covered this for the show already.
Yeah, that's when I want to say, is it John who picked this? Do you guys have the email? Can you check that email?
Is it Dave?
Dave
Johnson, was that his name?
That sounds right, David Johnson. Yeah,
Booby Magoo.
Who if you want an opportunity to pick our main attraction, just sign up for the mailing list at the website. Which I think, again, I said this many times, I think it's full, but I'm going to try to expand that so we can take more people in on the sign up. But, I'm so surprised. This has kind of been, you know, rattling around every time we come up with a theme. I try to think of ways to fit this one in. I'm glad he thought to do that. It's one of my favorite movies. I was a huge Roddy Piper fan as a kid.
Yeah, I got a Roddy Piper story for when we do this.
Yeah.
On.
And So looking forward to that. Do you guys see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who wants to do the honors?
How do we want to? Who wants? Can we say them all in Vincent Price voice?
Oh, I bet Kelly could.
Kelly, can you read it, or is it?
Yes, I can read it. Tree and Alex McNulty, thank you for being members of our masquerade. Bill Farmer in New York, I think. I always get you mixed up with the other Bills where you live. Blake Heath, I will not call you Balaki.
I gave you some spooky music, Kelly.
Satan does not like it.
He loves it.
Mark Watts! What? I'm just kidding.
Say that again. I like how you said Mark Watts.
Mark Watts!
Thank you.
Jeremy Burmeister, we know you. You wear great costumes. Amanda, hi. Alice Wallace, you are going to be corrupted by me later. And we're going to look at colorful themes.
Oh, whoops. I just realized that it's not just the Beelzebubs you're reading. I almost had you read a giant list of everyone. Yeah.
Whoops. I am going.
You think Mr. Price ever said whoops?
You're going to have to fight Andy to the death for that. Let's see. Iona Goodwin. I hope things are going well for you where you are.
Iona Greatwin.
Even though I am evil, Jeff Lancaster. Welcome.
Hi.
Brandon Whitehead and Emily and Trivia. You guys are cool. Adam Ingram. Don't you dare wear red. You'll be kicked off the Beelzebub list. I'm just kidding, you can wear it. Bill Chandler. Hello, Blaine Turner.
Hello.
Your name rhymes with Wayne Jana. I would like to say Todd DePompa, but I can't say it like that other guy. Dennis Kennedy. You are appreciated. All of you.
Well, thank you. I think we missed because of Freddy's oopsie poopsie. Did you say Ernest? Ernie?
Ernest Perez, I saved the most lovable of last.
Amanda?
I said her.
Oh. Elise, who I just saw walk behind you.
What?
Elise.
I said he her said Elise.
Too. Well, God damn it.
Just I assume said he said everybody.
But yeah. Ernest.
All right, we're good.
Oh, gosh. I hope somebody slaps you on the back and this is your real voice from now on.
Oh, yes.
Somebody oh, no.
Somebody get a horse to kick him. Because that's how it worked on Kids in the Hall. So I figure that's how we do this forever. All right, cool. So they live next week. Andy's going to review Scare Me. And we're all going to survive another week.
Mm-hmm. We are. Thank right. you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Of life.